Hi, James Lewis here, and this is the Renew Democracy Initiative audio newsletter. This Week in Democracy, a shadowy group of internet sleuths is using publicly accessible information to identify participants in the Capitol riot. But is the emerging technology that they're taking advantage of too much power for private citizens? After that, Belarusian dictator Alexander Lukashenko has turned his country into a pariah state by crushing pro-democracy protests and hunting down dissidents. So why has the IMF just given him $1 billion with no strings attached? Here's why you should care. Robert Reeder, a Maryland man, was due for sentencing last week after he pleaded guilty to parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building in the January 6th Capitol riot. Federal prosecutors recommended he spend 2 months in jail for his role in the riot. Then, just hours before Reeder was to arrive in court, a Twitter account posted a video of him assaulting a police officer. The judge postponed the hearing, and federal prosecutors started seeking 6 months of jail time. Reeder's new sentencing hearing is scheduled for October 8th. The Twitter account which posted the evidence of Reeder's assault is called Sedition Hunters. The group's stated purpose is to assist the U.S. FBI and Washington, D.C. Capitol Police to find those who committed crimes on January 6th at the Capitol. It's the most important of a few communities of virtual vigilantes seeking to identify participants, and it has already aided in numerous investigations. But as the Sedition Hunters help hold people accountable, their actions are also opening questions about the boundaries of vigilante justice and privacy. So how exactly have the Sedition Hunters aided the FBI? Well, they describe themselves as a global community of open-source intelligence investigators. The open-source portion of that description means that they're only looking at information that's readily available for anyone to find on the internet. During the riot, many of the participants filmed themselves and one another committing crimes and posted the videos for all the world to see. They might have tried to delete them since then, but groups like Sedition Hunters are making sure no one looks away. Sedition Hunters pieces together the events of January 6th through the thousands of hours of videos and hundreds of pictures that they were able to scrape from social media sites and other platforms online. They then painstakingly study every angle, image, and freeze frame to build profiles on the participants, something the FBI is doing as well, but with limited time, resources, and manpower. If they believe that they've positively identified an individual, they'll contact the FBI directly. If they have quality photos of an individual but can't determine their identity, they'll post the person's photos to Twitter as a social media age wanted poster of sorts, imploring anyone who recognized the person to reach out to the FBI themselves. But are the Sedition Hunters' tactics a threat to free societies? Well, to be clear, the Sedition Hunters stand firmly on the side of protecting democracy by trying to prevent the rioters from escaping the law. Still, that a group of online vigilantes have so much power, in some cases beyond the abilities of the FBI at the moment, it should raise eyebrows. The Sedition Hunters' analysis of social media posts is fairly anodyne. Where the Sedition Hunters go further is in using a program called PimEyes, a controversial facial recognition software. Individuals upload a photograph of someone's face to the service, then PimEyes analyzes it and compares it against a database with almost 1 billion photographs. Anyone can appear in the database, as the images have been pulled from the internet without the original poster's knowledge. In seconds, PimEyes can turn any internet user into an FBI agent, running sophisticated facial recognition software, and privacy protections are all but non-existent. Users can even set up alerts so that they can be notified whenever a new photograph of a particular person is posted on the internet. Now, the technology is highly controversial, and rightfully so. A similar company, Clearview AI, scraped more than 3 billion photos and videos from the internet by 2019 and created their own facial recognition database. Marketing it to law enforcement, they sold their product to more than 600 agencies in America. Clearly, they had created something extremely powerful, yet at no point did they face scrutiny from regulators or have to worry about privacy. There is nothing preventing a company from downloading every photograph or video of a person's face on the internet, creating a private database, powering it with advanced facial recognition technology, and releasing it to the world. Every time someone posts a photo to Facebook, they're unwittingly building out their facial recognition profile. So what does this mean about the Sedition Hunters themselves? Well, PimEyes eases the Sedition Hunters' work, but it may complicate their legacy. openly accessible facial recognition technology is aiding law enforcement in this instance, but it could threaten any semblance of privacy in years to come. An early investor in Clearview told the New York Times, "I've come to the conclusion that because information constantly increases, there's never going to be privacy. Laws have to determine what's legal, but you can't ban technology." Well, maybe you can't ban it, but you can regulate it. In Europe, the General Data Protection Regulations, or GDPR, establish sweeping guidelines on how data can be handled and promise significantly greater oversight. The United States should consider its own comprehensive data regulations to establish clear limitations on how private citizens and public entities can use personal data. If an American wants their personal photographs and likeness to be removed from a publicly accessible facial recognition service, it should be their right. While law enforcement agencies should certainly be granted more privileges to retain major databases, even they should face scrutiny for potential abuses. Data protections are severely lacking, and we won't like where we find ourselves in a few years if we don't work proactively to protect personal privacy today. At the moment, the sedition hunters are doing the federal government a great service, and we should celebrate them for their efforts and resourcefulness. Yet their tactics must serve as a warning. Online facial recognition software is turning everyday Americans into capable FBI agents, and there's nothing to prevent them from abusing that power. Moving on to our next story. Why is the IMF funding dictators? On August 23rd last year, 250,000 people marched through Minsk, protesting dictator Alexander Lukashenko's self-declared victory in the sham elections held about a week earlier. Then, exactly 1 year later to the day, the IMF announced it was awarding Lukashenko's government $1 billion, undermining the sanctions that Western governments have imposed on the regime for offenses including hijacking a Ryanair flight to arrest the young journalist Roman Protasevich. So what could Belarus do with the money? The money given to Belarus is ostensibly to combat the unprecedented COVID-19 crisis, according to IMF officials, but it's doubtful that the money will actually help anyone but Lukashenko. A 2008 study found that IMF funding of oppressive regimes increased government use of torture and extrajudicial killing, and also worsened the overall human rights conditions in developing countries. Another study found that IMF aid tends to increase political stability in dictatorial regimes, preventing democratic reform from taking place. But why does the IMF even fund dictators? The IMF tends not to consider the brutality of a sitting regime when deciding if it'll grant funds. Instead, the organization looks at whether or not the regime has international recognition. Thankfully, at the moment, that means that the IMF is withholding money from the Taliban. But given the IMF's track record, that policy seems liable to change. The organization has demonstrated a disturbing willingness to authorize loans to authoritarian regimes, with 12 of its 33 current long-term lending partners classified as not free, according to Freedom House's most recent metrics. The IMF's policies rely on a decades-old falsehood, that the average citizen living under a dictatorship is more likely to benefit from the government receiving money than the dictator himself. In reality, the IMF is giving Lukashenko greater authority to quash Belarusian freedom. After all, why would a dictator like Lukashenko, whose sole interest is maintaining power, accept IMF money if it weren't bolstering his control of the country? If the free world wants to help Belarusians, it requires cutting off aid to Lukashenko's government. Even well-intentioned grants do far more harm than good when the money flows directly to the ruling government with no strings attached. The IMF claims it's funding COVID recovery in Belarus, but it's really supporting state-sponsored tyranny. Belarusians might be more free than Afghans under the Taliban, but the IMF's policy should be the same. No money can be put into the pockets of illegitimate autocrats.